This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Donald Trump has helped put the national spotlight on the Ohio Valley's opioid crisis. But his record of action on the issue is mixed. As part of the series One Year Under Trump, Aaron Payne reports that public health officials in the region say they need more funding to back up the president's promises.
Donald Trump told supporters on the campaign trail that he would work to stop the flow of drugs into the country, increase the penalty for drug trafficking, and make treatment more accessible.
We will give people struggling with addiction access to the help they need.
And in his first year as president, his administration has taken steps to fulfill his promise. Health officials in our region believe some of these steps are necessary to fight the epidemic. But many of these officials, like Lisa Roberts with the City Health Department in Portsmouth, Ohio, say more could have been done in Trump's first year.
I don't really think that they've done a lot. Kind of still waiting.
Early on, Trump formed an opioids commission for policy recommendations. Its final report in November included over 50 recommendations, but only a few have been put into place. One of the few that has been partially implemented is a waiver for states to charge Medicaid for services that were previously prohibited. West Virginia's waiver was approved in October. The state's chief health officer, Dr. Rahul Gupta, says starting this month, they've been able to use Medicaid funds for life-saving resources.
With our Medicaid partners, one of the first steps we've taken is to be able to, for the first responders, to bill for naloxone.
Gupta says more resources from the waiver will roll out in July. Another recommendation from the committee was to declare the opioid crisis a public health emergency to free up resources and take swift action. The administration publicly debated whether it would make a declaration before Trump did so in October. The plan called for programs targeted at improving treatment in rural areas. This included increased treatment through telemedicine, the development of a nationwide education program, and the streamlining of funds for treatment. Gupta says there are good initiatives in the declaration, but there is no assurance of new funding.
That's the piece that I think is a critical piece here, a public health emergency. Simply isn't a declaration, but it's much more than that.
The Trump administration looked instead to Congress for funding. And while there is talk of adding some money in the end-of-year spending bill, there is no assurance at this time. Meanwhile, many of the programs highlighted in the emergency declaration have not been put into action. Regional lawmakers have urged Trump to extend the health emergency that is set to expire next week after 90 days. And Lisa Roberts says that can serve as a snapshot of the Trump approach to the opioid epidemic in his first year. Promising steps, but little action.
We still have millions of people that are addicted that we have to, these are the people that are currently dying that we need to stabilize.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Aaron Payne.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. A new survey of West Virginia voters was released this week. As Molly Bourne reports, the poll revealed some striking views about the opioid epidemic.
Among other topics, Orion Strategies asked a wide range of questions about the state's opioid epidemic. About two-thirds of voters said they know someone who's suffering or has suffered from addiction to opioids, including oxycodone and heroin. When Orion asked the question 2 years ago, about half the voters gave that same response. The survey yielded other intriguing results. Orion asked voters if they view addiction as a medical condition or as a moral weakness. A third said it's a disease, and just over 40% said it's a moral failing. Orion President Curtis Wilkerson says about a fifth of respondents called it both.
And that lends itself to people believing more likely that people can just, you know, stop if they want to. It's a choice at that point, as opposed to a medical condition. That alters the conversation about what the treatment options are. And it alters the conversation about how society and government and the voters feel that that addiction should be dealt with.
He says more than half of those polled said the state's opioid epidemic has gotten worse, and about a third said it stayed the same.
I mean, the West Virginia legislature and the United States Congress and a number of elected officials have been working toward dealing with the opioid epidemic for the last several years. And so the question is, do voters feel those efforts are working? And so, and the answer was no.
Half of those polled said opioid and heroin addiction should be addressed primarily through medically assisted treatments, while a third said the abstinence-only model was the way to go. And nearly three-quarters of voters said they would support providing free long-term birth control to women addicted to opioids. State Senate Finance Chairman Craig Blair, a Republican from Berkeley County, has floated that controversial idea as one way to tackle the problem. Orion Strategies polled 365 West Virginians between Friday last week and Monday via cell phone or landline. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Molly Bourne.
Mark Strickland works at the fire department in Charleston, West Virginia. On the front lines, he sees firsthand, day after day, people battling addiction, overdosing, and dying from drugs. Strickland told Anna Sale on the episode of Death, Sex, and Money, the most difficult calls involve children.
Specific to the calls where you're watching people who are nearly dead, mm-hmm. you're bringing them back to life, and you find them again, nearly dead. Mm-hmm. Does it feel like you have a really close-up view on something that's, like, kind of breaking down?
Very much so. On those calls, a lot of times I've walked out feeling as much of an enabler as the dealers on the street. Because if I just show up and shove some Narcan in your arm and, you better now? You good? You're going to be sick later. See ya. And walk out. What the hell have I done? Now, given the only thing you need to be to go to rehab is alive, you got to have a pulse to get in rehab. That's handy. So if I don't go out and do my job assessing the human body in front of me and give Narcan an opiate overdose and get them alive, then they're never going to have the chance to go to rehab. And we've heard the commentary, both locally and nationally, you shouldn't do that. You're just wasting money on these people. You just all let them die. If they've overdosed twice, you should just not have to Narcan them again. You get three strikes in life, right? Well, I don't know, do you? How many diabetics do we go to that, you know what? You let your sugar drop again because you didn't take your insulin right. So now I've got to give you D50. I've done that to you twice. Time for you to die. Seriously. How many of those patients do you say, two bites of the apple, you're done. So who are we to judge a person, rich, poor, black, white, Jew, Christian, Muslim? I don't care. They're a human being.
Do you think you're stopping loss?
I don't know. The left side, right side, the left side, the bleeding heart, save the world side says you're giving people the chance to go to rehab, to change their ways, to be a productive citizen. You're giving that kid his father back, even if for another day. You're helping that family recover. EMS is doing their part to stop loss. We're preventing deaths from overdoses. That's the left side, bleeding heart, unicorns and rainbows. The dark side says, yeah, all we're doing is perpetuating a problem. We're keeping more addicts on the street. If there weren't as many customers, there wouldn't be the industry for dealers because all the patients would be dead. So why should we pay our taxes for our cities, our counties, our states to buy Narcan to put on ambulances because you want to go commit a felony and you want to go shoot heroin? We've had many people, many patients that we've run two and three and four times. My high watermark on repeat offenders or frequent flyer customers, however you want to look at it, was 11. I ran a guy 11 times.
Did he make it?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably the thing that makes me the most mad and the ones that piss me off are the ones involving kids, when kids are home. And
Threat at 437, engine 452, attention 408, cross streets, Anaconda Avenue, Glover Street. 27-year-old male, cardiac arrest.
That's an overdose.
1129.
I'll be back.
You need to go?
Yeah, that's a heroin overdose. I'll bet you pay check.
I met Mark for the first time when I was back home in Charleston last month. When he got the interview request from us, at first he thought the email from Death, Sex, and Money was some kind of prank from the guys at work. In a follow-up email, I proved my local cred by telling him where I went to high school. I've become used to updates from home about someone I knew or someone I knew's little brother or sister dying of an overdose. It's not just in West Virginia, of course, but the current opioid epidemic has its roots in this part of the country. And it's been this way for years now, so much so that you can almost become numb to it. I wanted to hear from someone who can't ignore it. And that led me to Mark. After After the call came over the radio about the 27-year-old man in cardiac arrest, Mark jumped into a fire truck with some of his colleagues, and they were gone. We waited at the firehouse, and Mark was back within an hour.
Sorry about that.
Don't apologize.
Mark told me a woman had called 911 when she found her boyfriend unconscious.
Boyfriend was sleeping over his girlfriend's house, and she went to check on her 3-year-old son in the other room and noticed that he wasn't breathing too well, and called 911 and thought he was dead, and he was breathing about 4 times a minute and ashen and gray-looking, got sweaty, and his percentage of blood, percentage of oxygen in his bloodstream was less than 50%, so we controlled his airway and used a bag valve mask and breathed for him, started an IV, pushed some Narcan, and he woke up.
And you said there was a 3-year-old in the house?
There was. He was in the other room. He was in his room playing, and his mom kept him away and didn't let him see and what have you. But that's just, those are the tough ones for us, is this well-intentioned mother trying to make it. Her boyfriend's in there shooting up heroin in her house, and now we've got to report that to CPS.
To Child Protective Services.
Right.
Had you seen this particular guy before?
No, he just got out of prison for drug distribution charges.
That was Mark Strickland, who works at the fire department in Charleston, speaking with Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money. His interview is featured in this weekend's episode of Inside Appalachia, which airs Sunday morning at 7 and Sunday evening at 6. Or you can find Inside Appalachia wherever you get your podcasts. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:56. Mostly sunny skies today with highs in the upper 30s and 40s, clear overnight with lows in the 20s. Sunshine on Saturday with highs in the 40s and 50s. Chance of rain moves in Saturday night and Sunday, low Saturday night in the 30s. Highs on Sunday in the 40s and 50s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Wells Home Furnishings, offering in-home design services, new furniture in your space. Learn more at wellshome.com. Southern folk musician John Paul White performs this Mountain Stage Song of the Week, an atmospheric lament called Once and Future Queen.
You anyway.
Again, that was John Paul White performing his song Once and Future Queen. To hear this and more, tune in Friday and Saturday nights at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Glennis Board, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, and Roxy Todd. Our producer is Liz McCormick. I'm Teresa Wills.